1. Step together, step. The process. Doing the work of healing our fractured, world-weary selves is both linear and non-linear. The process is often 2 steps forward and 1 step back. Consider that no one who has ever executed an elegant dive off a diving board got there without first splashing around in the shallow end. Then, somewhere along the way, it becomes much easier to just approach the board and slip into the water without even having gotten wet first. But if we're new to swimming in spiritual healing waters, it makes sense to go slow. We need to learn the ropes and gradually work our way toward the deep end. No one should be thrown in over their head to see what happens. As this analogy goes, that tends to set us back in the learning process. So while we need to learn to move within duality, doing our work isn't a sink or swim situation. This is an important point to take in, because managing our expectations can keep us on track when the going gets tough. And make no mistake, at some point, it will. But it's entirely possible to keep ourselves upright through rough territory. Like, it's good to know that getting water up our nose is a natural part of learning and growing. Even though it's not entirely linear, this spiritual work of healing has an additive nature to it. Do step 1, then add step 2. Do 1 and 2, then add step 3. This means we need to start wherever we are and grapple with what's in front of us. Once we are stable enough to stay upright and afloat, we will naturally become ready to move toward deeper work. We should expect some slipping and sliding along the way. We're here to learn our lessons. In the pathwork view, our work is already underway and has been since the day we arrived. To say we are now ready to start doing the work is really saying we are ready to take on our work with conscious intention. Rather than letting life have its way with us, as it will, we're going to face our challenges head on. We are going to approach them with all the goodwill we can muster and get everything from them we can. For life is going to teach us the lessons we need to learn, whether we like it or not. To be fair, on another level, before we arrived at Earth School, we agreed to this. We knew we had some areas of our spirit in need of remedial work. We came here to sort ourselves out. We took on a task to reconnect some more of our fragmented bits that fractured during our fall from God's grace. Also know this, if life feels like it's one difficult wave after another, and we don't understand why, we may not yet be seeing what life is asking us to learn. That's why we may now feel we're in over our heads. For there is a spiritual law that says we are always given the easiest possible way to deal with any challenge we need to go through, for our own healing. If our way is now choppy, it's because we didn't make much effort when less effort would have been required. Now, life feels harder. The struggles and difficulties, due to the law of cause and effect, keep accelerating. We want to blame our way out of our problems, which is why we typically begin doing our work by lamenting that, poor me, we're a victim. In Jill's experience,
I was 26 years old the day I went to my first AA meeting. It was 1989, and I had just come back from a business trip during which I had enjoyed my very last drink. I'd spent an evening in the bar of a Holiday Inn where I could drink to my heart's content and not have to drive home. I cringe even now over my memory of the evening. Seemed like such a good gig at the time, but also a sad way to be living my life. I can't say I hadn't seen this coming. I'd been dodging, giving up drinking for several years. And truth be told, this was the track I was on since the day I took my very first drink at the age of 13. Yet, on the day I picked up my first and only white chip of surrender, I fortunately had a lot of yets remaining in my pocket. I hadn't lost a job yet. I hadn't messed up my children yet. In fact, I hadn't had any kids yet. Although I had gone through one marriage already, I hadn't lost a house yet. All things considered, I was grateful. It could have been worse. One thing that hastened my entry into sobriety was the exposure I'd had to the evils of alcoholism by way of my father's slippery slope. I had been in sixth grade when he went through treatment for the first of four rounds. As one can imagine, there was much slipping and sliding in between admissions, and I saw every single one of his relapses coming. More aptly, I felt them, and it sure didn't feel good. You'd think a person would avoid those spirits in a bottle altogether then, wouldn't you? But no, that's not the way alcoholism rolls. I have no commentary about the nature versus nurture aspects of my genetic predisposition to becoming an alcoholic. I only know I was glad they were saving a chair for me when I got there, because upon arrival, I was inwardly a mess, humiliated by my behavior and befuddled about how to change it. As they say, my best thinking had gotten me to the doorstep of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that was the best place in the world I could have wound up. For 15 years, I would show up every week to an AA meeting. I liked the things they said that helped me find some semblance of self, like, AA is not a place for bad people who need to get good, it's a place for sick people who need to get well. I heard, there's a God-shaped hole in my soul that the wind blows through, and I thought, these people get me. It's like they were talking straight at me when they said, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. And don't drink, even if your ass falls off. Another of my favorites. Want to become an old-timer in AA? Don't drink and don't die. Their wisdom flowed like water into my soul, and I was parched. I went to meetings every week because I needed to hear what happened to people who didn't go to meetings. Also, I went because I needed to learn how a person copes with life sober. People who drink, they pointed out, have a broken coper. I went because my way hadn't worked. I arrived in a state of humiliation, and stayed because they were teaching me true humility. I was an atheist the day I first walked through those doors. Yes, I thought perhaps there actually is a God who had built this place. But he had long ago turned his back on us, or at least he had on me, and had just said, go. I felt I had been on my own since the beginning. But although I didn't have a God connection of my own, I didn't believe these people were making things up. They spoke about having found their own connection to a higher power. I wanted what they had. I was willing to keep hanging out to see if one day I too might find something I could believe in, including myself.
In Scott's experience.
On a Sunday morning in the summer of 1998, I prepared to start my seventh triathlon of the year. I finished my warm-up, but already felt completely spent. My heart rate started spiking wildly. Still, when the gun went off, I dove into the water, ignoring all the warning signs that had been flashing for months. I was riding a high and would not be stopped. A week or so before I had finished a half Ironman on a blistering hot August day. Immediately afterward, I signed up for the race I had spent years working toward, an Ironman. 2 miles into the bike segment, I stood up in the saddle to climb a hill and my bike broke. It was unrideable. I turned around and slowly walked my bike back to the starting area. It was my last race because that morning my body broke too. I was about 13 when I saw the first ever televised coverage of the Ironman triathlon. It hit me like a bolt from the blue. I knew right then and there that someday I would be an Ironman. I was even going to tattoo the Ironman logo above my ankle. Today I cringe at the thought and the hubris, but back then I was all in. Starting immediately after grad school and during early parenthood, I trained year-round. I developed a sharp focus to keep pushing through the fatigue and discomfort, and there was a lot of that. I didn't see the crash coming. I went from being able to run 6 miles at any time, no matter what else I had done that day, to, snap of the fingers, not even being able to walk up a flight of stairs. My autonomic nervous system and endocrine systems went haywire, unable to control my pulse, body temperature, and most basic functions. At work, I would stay at my desk all day because walking to the bathroom was so taxing. Still, even after all that, I could not let go of the dream of Iron Man. I was angry with my body. Doctors couldn't figure it out any better than I could. I had to confront the possibility that I might not recover. I realized that everything I had built in my life, my career, marriage, and fatherhood, were all hanging by a thread. I realized I needed more than to just heal my body. I needed to understand why I did this to myself so that if I did get better, I would not repeat it in another way. At age 30, I took out a piece of paper and wrote, "I am going to heal myself mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, as deep as I can go." I drew a little boat sitting on the water's surface and drew little streamers down into the unknown depths for each category. Then I focused all my relentlessness into healing. Of course, I had no idea how to do this, none whatsoever. I had been studying Tai Chi Chuan for 6 years, so I asked my instructor if she had any ideas. She consulted her lineage holders, and together they offered me a practice to follow. Nothing much happened for a long time, but I couldn't physically do anything other than sit, so I persisted and kept my commitment to healing. I continued working closely with my teacher. After a year, I had gained the most basic, elementary level awareness of all my major chakras. To say this was mind-blowing, for an engineer no less, is an understatement. I needed to have this ground-shifting experience to break open fixed ideas I held about life. Still, the process of stabilizing was very slow. I found a doctor who helped me understand what had happened to my body when I forced my training too hard and too fast. On a deeper emotional and spiritual level, it took years to fully work through the experience. Why did I push myself so hard through such deep fatigue? And why did I focus so much time and energy on Iron Man when I was needed as a parent, husband, and provider? In pathwork, we learn about images. For me, my mistaken belief was, "If I am strong, I will be loved." What better way to show I am strong than via Iron Man? Looking back, sitting on the floor at age 13, I watched those athletes drive themselves to exhaustion to finish and fall into the arms of their loved ones who were cheering them on. They were so excited to receive the new Iron Men and Iron Women. I drove myself relentlessly in order to show myself and others I am strong, mostly in order to be loved. What a misguided notion. Not only could it never have worked, it took time and energy away from what actually could have worked: being fully present and engaged as a husband and father.